The foster care system in our country seems to come in for nearly as much scrutiny and criticism as the educational system. That should not surprise anyone. A system that takes children out of their homes because of perceived dangers and places the kids with foster parents they've never met, that's a system that will naturally result in at least some feelings of sadness and dislocation. But it can be improved, many people insist, including present and former foster kids themselves. They speak through the Oregon Foster Youth Connection, and we have two guests from that organization with us. Michelle Palmer is the Lane County chapter lead. She also worked with Foster Youth in Action National Network, which is organizations like OFYC. Michelle, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good to have you here. In the studio with me is Zachary Miller, who is an Oregon Foster Youth Connection Legislative Action Team member, has been talking to members of the legislature about foster care issues for the better part of a decade now. Zach, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thank you so much. This is exciting.
Good to have you both here. Michelle, start us off with the general stuff. What is Oregon Foster Youth Connection and how did it get started?
Okay. So the Oregon Foster Youth Connection actually became a thing from, coincidentally, from an organization down in California that we based our structure off of. I think we were founded 8 years ago. Is that right, Zach?
Yes, our first Capitol Day being about 8 years ago.
So what's a Capitol Day? Let's start there, Zach.
Well, so what usually precedes a Capitol Day is a policy conference, which we just had about 2 weeks ago, if memory serves. And that's where we usually come up with ideas of what to present to the legislature at said Capitol Day. Now, the Capitol Day is sort of like a 2-3-day conference, and many youth show up, and we come up with ideas of what to present to legislatures. And we even have a couple members from the Foster Youth in Action group that Michelle involved herself with. They've been here for every conference to kind of help along and help us craft these recommendations. And then on that last day, we go to the Capitol, get ourselves all dapper and dressed up, and go talk to the different legislatures and senators and such.
Before Foster Youth in Action, Michelle, was there much of a voice for people who had been in foster care in talk of reforming the system?
You know, I'm not really sure. I've only been a part of Foster Youth in Action for about a year now. Mm-hmm. I don't know really their backstory totally. I know that, once again, it was a group that came out of California. But besides that, I don't know how long they've been around.
And so, Zach, is the composition of Oregon Foster Youth Connection, is it just people who are now or were formerly foster kids, or is there a broader representation than that?
Mostly. I mean, a lot of the participants themselves, those aged, I believe, 13 to 25, if memory serves, the participants themselves will have to have been a part of foster care or currently. But there are adult supporters that can help out that can be former foster youth. As a matter of fact, there's one or two involved that are. But those also number among caseworkers, CASA advocates, and former foster parents or even current foster parents.
All right. So people involved in the system one way or the other all taking part in this. What are the things, would you say, Zach, are the things that are least understood by the general public and most in need of change in the foster care system in Oregon?
Oh, goodness.
Is it a long list?
Yes, quite a long list. But a few things is just understanding that there's that feeling of the feeling of not belonging, because a lot of foster youth are just bounced from home to home just after a few months. While I myself was among the lucky bunch of the 5 years while I was in care, I only went through 3 placements. And the fact that I have to say that I only went through 3 compared to, I mean, I've heard of youth from age like 5 to aging out go through 50 plus homes.
Wow.
So I think the biggest thing that people don't understand is that we can't really feel normal. It's, you know, it's okay. You just, you know, you're with the family or you're at school, you feel normal. It's like, I can't really when I don't know if I'm going to be in a different home next week. So,
What tends to bring about the changes? Why do some kids move on so quickly?
There are various factors playing in. It could be the youth feeling uncomfortable with the home. It could be the foster parents simply not feeling as though they are, I guess, compatible. It could be any number of reasons from the caseworkers or whoever's involved in the system. It just happens at all levels that a lot of times we don't even know why.
We're talking to Zachary Miller and Michelle Palmer with Oregon Foster Youth Connection. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about their efforts to reform foster care in the state of Oregon. 800-838-3760 to join us by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Michelle, I want to ask you the same question that I just asked Zachary, though. What are some of the things that are least understood by the general public about how the foster care system functions in Oregon?
Well, like I said, like Zach said, there's a lot of things. But one of the things that I notice happening a lot is that when foster youth tell people that they're in foster care, they automatically assume that it's because of the youth themselves, that they got in trouble with the law, and that's why they're in care, which 95% of the time, that's not true. There are those rare cases where, yeah, it does happen because of the youth, but it doesn't happen very often. Also, I know it's really hard to make friends.
Partly because you're moving around so much?
Yes. If you're lucky enough to move homes but stay in the same school, then you can build those connections. But if you move around a lot, you tend to move schools also. So it just makes it super hard to make any connections in the community, any connections in the, as well as in the home. And that happens, like Zach said, for various reasons.
Michelle, you've had a chance to compare notes with people in other states. I mean, are the problems and issues that occur in the foster system in Oregon unique to Oregon, or do you hear them from other people in other parts of the country as well?
Oh, no, they're not unique to Oregon in any means. One thing that is unique to Oregon is that we have a Foster Youth Bill of Rights, where the only other state that I know of that has that is California, and none of the others do. A lot of the states have similar problems with moving foster youth around consistently, but there seem to be more of a lack of foster parents and or caseworkers. So they have children moving around because the foster parent isn't equipped to deal with them, or the foster parent just chooses to have them leave their home.
Let's talk about the Foster Youth Bill of Rights. Zach, can I suspect that you were part of that process to get that into law?
Yeah, actually. Now, I could be wrong about this. Correct me if I'm wrong, Michelle, but I believe it was 2013, at least, that Capitol Day is when we presented it to the legislature, and then it was the start of the following year, 2014, I believe, that implemented the Bill of Rights. But it was an interesting idea from the start, definitely caught traction very quickly. And so it was just something that made sense.
Effective January of 2014, I see here. So it definitely passed on the 2013 legislative session. And what are some of the things contained in the Foster Youth Bill of Rights?
I can't remember anything particularly specific at the moment, but it just outlines a lot of sort of the basic rights that really you would expect from foster youth going to a new foster home. But along with that, Bill also created the foster care ombudsman position within the governor's office, and Darren Mancuso is currently the ombudsman, and he's been doing a fantastic job.
An ombudsman is often like a consumer advocate. So who are the people that the ombudsman is generally responding to?
Foster youth themselves. It has sort of like a hotline set up that if, you know, foster youth is having problems in the home and are too afraid to say anything to like the caseworker or the parents, you know, for fear of retaliation, because that's happened sometimes, they can call this number, and being kept, you know, confidential, the ombudsman will try to take the steps necessary to try to help the foster youth.
You know, as a foster parent myself for 9 years, it seems like the approach to foster care is amended about as often as school curricula, you know. So it seems like there's always a push for reform. I mean, and you've been at this for the better part of 10 years now, it sounds like. So, I mean, does it seem that way to you as well?
Yeah, it changes a lot. It really, like, you know, we talk about different issues and, you know, talk about something that's an issue in one county, but it's not an issue in another. And all the problem, I think, is that training for foster parents and caseworkers are different from county to county. And so I think if the training was consistent across the board, then I think wouldn't be amended as often. But I suppose that's a purpose of the Oregon Foster Youth Connection, is to help amend it in a good way. In a perfect world, we wouldn't need a foster care system. But unfortunately, not quite a perfect world. So we just have to do what we can, and there's still a lot of work to be done.
The training in Jackson County as of 12 years ago when we took it was 18 hours, I think. It was 15 to 18, depending on how you took it. We took it on successive weekends, 9 hours, two Saturdays in a row. Is that roughly the same, and is there some feeling among youth foster connection or your foster youth connection that it should be more or just something more comprehensive?
I think depending on the foster parents, I think in a general sense, it's felt that the training perhaps should be more to better prepare foster parents for the job of being a foster parent. I personally don't feel as if 18 hours is quite enough, because it's a big responsibility. You know, you could be dealing with someone that's has, you know, anxiety or depression or even something like PTSD, and a lot of parents just haven't dealt with that kind of thing before. So when the youth starts exhibiting those symptoms, they don't know what to do. And so
it's not a therapeutic setting in that sense. We're talking to Oregon Foster Youth Connection, Zachary Miller and Michelle Palmer, our guests on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join into the conversation about foster care and foster care reform. 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Michelle, what are some of the things that are still hanging out there that Oregon Foster Youth Connection would like to get addressed that has not been taken up so far by people in positions of power?
Well, I know one of the things that we talked about at this last policy meeting was a sibling bill of rights, because there are a lot of siblings that get separated from each other for various reasons, and then they lose contact, or they get adopted and the adoptive parents don't let siblings see each other. So we were going to, we proposed an action to set up a sibling bill of rights. I know that's a huge thing going on right now. Zach, what else did we talk about?
Well, I know one of the things that my group, because at this policy conference we break off into groups to cover different topics. My group discussed the idea of conflict resolution training. As I mentioned earlier, you know, foster parents, they don't really know how to handle certain situations. And so we suggested that that DHS implement some sort of conflict resolution training with foster parents, and maybe call upon sort of those counseling resources as like a mediator between foster parents and foster youth if conflict arises.
You mentioned something about caseworkers and parents and the general supply thereof. I know that things were tight enough when I was a foster parent that the caseworkers would make their mandatory once a month viewing of the foster kids, but sometimes not a lot more than that. What is the situation with getting staffing, which obviously takes a lot of money for the state, and getting people to step forward as foster parents? I mean, it seems like there was one of the reasons we got involved was because there was such a shortage, it seemed like, in Jackson County at the time.
Yeah, it's a daunting task, and I think that's probably the biggest thing that is probably maybe repelling people is the idea of having a child that's not their own in their home and trying to raise them as their own. I know when I was in care, I aged out in 2011. And so here in Ashland, I had only known about, there were only two homes, including the one I was a part of. And then the home I was in had boys and the other home had girls. So they're usually in short supply, but once again, that changes from county to county. I know, from what I understand, around like the Tri-City area in Portland, they've got plenty of foster parents, at least from what I've heard.
For the folks who don't understand the term age out, that simply means you get to be an adult and you're no longer part of the foster care system anymore?
Yeah, so I turned 18 shortly before I graduated high school. And so what happens, you just go to a meeting and they're like, okay, so this is the procedure for aging out and, you know, go through this and, you know, get access to, you know, your case file and things like that. But then they're just like, okay, so, yeah. And then once you leave, you're not in the foster care system anymore. It's kind of, you expect more of an oomph, you know, when it happens because you're like, I'm out. But then it's just kind of, eh. I'm out. Okay. It's strange, but...
Is there a real sense of now what?
Yes, very much so. And I could go on about issues surrounding that, but there's also the option of reopening your case voluntarily until you're 21, if that is correct. I'm not entirely sure. Is that right?
Michelle?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
You could also keep your case open until you're 21. I know that's what I had decided in my case was to keep mine open until I was 21, which I just turned that last, like, 2 weeks ago. So,
happy birthday. And what was the reason for keeping your case open, Michelle?
There's a variety of reasons as to closing your case at 18 or keeping it open until 21. I know if you keep it open, you get college benefits. So you get, like, the Pell Grant, the Chafee Grant,
So some services and things that'll help you get a greater launch into life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard any talk of the independent living program. Is that still functioning? I mean, is there still some push to give you a chance at some life skills before you age out of foster care, Zach?
Oh, very much so. And once again, that is another thing that is different from county to county. I think, from what I've seen, the biggest issue with the independent living program is just such the colossal waiting list. I know when I was in care, I was put on the waiting list when I was 16, but then never had a chance to access those services because I wasn't able to get off the waiting list before I left care.
Michelle, you were starting to say something about independent living too.
Mm-hmm. So youths are automatically put on the waiting list when they turn 13, if they were in care for at least 6 months beforehand. I started accessing ILP services when I was 16. Yes. And, I was able to access them all the way through until, March of this year when I closed my DHS case. I was on the independent living program's housing for a good part of this last year, and then I closed out my case, and I am no longer a part of that.
What is then the top of the list for the legislature coming in February of 2017? What are you gonna? What's the top of the list of things to ask for there, Zach?
Well, that differs. We're gonna figure that out at the conference that happens beforehand. I mean, we have some ideas. And that was the purpose of the policy conference, to try to get some ideas of what we might want to present. But a lot of the recommendations that we'll want to bring will come sort of to the top at the conference in February.
Is the Department of Human Services, which runs foster care in Oregon through the Child Welfare Division, is it required to tell foster youth that Oregon Foster Youth Connection exists?
Honestly, I don't know, to be honest.
No, they're not. They're
really?
Not.
And so, I mean, how many referrals do you get, though? I mean, are new people calling up Oregon Foster Youth Connection all the time and saying, you know, I got some things I'd like to talk over with you?
Well, see, down here in Maine County, we run things a little bit differently than Tri-County and Marion County does.
Mm-hmm.
With us, our O5C nights are the same as our ILP nights, the same time, same building.
Mm-hmm.
So our youth get to choose as to which program they want to do.
It has to be one or the other. They can't do independent living and Oregon Foster Youth Connection?
No, they can be a member of both.
Okay.
It's just they get to choose that night which one they feel like doing.
Okay. So a bunch of decisions left to decide what you're going to address the legislature with. I mean, and generally the kinds of things that you've requested so far, the ombudsman looks like it certainly requires some staff time and some expenditure there. But are you asking so much for money or just changes in policy generally, Zach?
It's mostly changes in policy. When it came to creating the ombudsman position, there was a matter of money. So I was part of that legislative action team for that year. And so, you know, we sit in on testifying things like the financial committee. And it was really quite amusing yet awesome at the same time, because when we were in the financial committee hearing all that, the chairwoman came up to us and was like, we, you know, looked at the number we gave her and was like, you're not asking for more? Because we can give you more.
Huh.
And we're like, no, this is just what we need. You know, we thought about it, but we appreciate it. So it just goes to show just how many allies we have in the legislature, which is always encouraging.
More about policy than price tag, for sure. Zachary Miller is with the Oregon Foster Youth Connection as a legislative action team member. Michelle Palmer is the Lane County chapter lead. She also worked with Foster Youth in Action, the national network. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.